This is from the Book of Riano, Civil Procedure, 2019 edition, Chapter 4, Pleadings and Motions, B, Parts of a Pleading. Caption of the pleading. The caption contains the following: A, name of the court; B, title of the action; and C, docket number, if assigned. Title of the action. The title of the action contains the names of the parties whose participation in the case shall be indicated. This means the party shall be indicated as either plaintiff or defendant. They shall all be named in the original complaint or petition, but in subsequent pleadings it shall be sufficient if the name of the first party on each side be stated with an appropriate indication whether there are other parties. Example, Pedro Reyes et al. Body of the pleading, number 1. The body of the pleading sets forth its designation, the allegations of the party's claims or defenses, the relief prayed for, and the date of the pleading. Number 2, the allegations in the body of the pleading shall be divided into paragraphs and shall be so numbered for ready identification. This numbering scheme is significant because in subsequent pleadings, a paragraph may be referred to only by its number without need for repeating the entire allegations in the paragraph. Each paragraph shall contain a statement of a single set of circumstances so far as that can be done with convenience. Headings, designation of causes of actions joined in one complaint. When two or more causes of action are joined, the first cause of action shall be prefaced with the words first cause of action of the second cause of action by the words second cause of action, and so on for the others, according to Section 2, Rule 7 of the Rules of Court. Allegations of ultimate facts. Number 1. Every pleading, including the complaint, is not supposed to allege conclusions. A pleading must only aver facts because conclusions are for the courts to make. Thus, it was clearly declared by the courts that a bare allegation that one is entitled to something is not an allegation but a conclusion. Number 2, the rule requires that the pleading need only contain the allegations of ultimate facts. Example, the facts essential to a party's cause of action or defense. That's according to Section 1, Rule 8, Rules of Court. Or such facts as are so essential that they cannot be stricken out without leaving the statement of the cause of action inadequate. The ultimate facts are to be stated in a methodical and logical form and in a plain, concise, and direct manner. Number 3, not all facts may be allowed as averments in a pleading. Under Section 1 of Rule 8, every pleading shall omit from its allegation statements of merely evidentiary facts. The rule prohibiting allegations of evidentiary facts in a pleading is not difficult to understand. Evidentiary matters are to be presented during the trial of the case, not in the pleadings of the parties. Number 4, the above paragraphs merely state general rules. A complaint in an environmental case, for example, appears to be governed by a different rule. In addition to the requirement that the complaint must state that it is an environmental case and the law involved, the rule requires also that all evidence proving the cause of action consisting of affidavits, documents, and if possible, object evidence shall be attached to be verified to the verified complaint. If this is so, one cannot avoid making statements or allegations of evidentiary facts. In small claim cases, the statement of claim or complaint is required to be accompanied by the affidavits of witness and other evidence to support the claim, aside from photocopies of the actionable document to support the claim. Similarly, a statement of evidentiary facts may not be avoided in forcible entry and unlawful detainer case, since under Section 5 of Rule 70, matters of evidence are allowed to be attached to the complaint. Relief. Number 1, following the averments of the cause of action of the plaintiff, the complaint must contain a statement of the relief sought from the court and to which he believes he is entitled. This portion of the complaint is oftentimes referred to as the prayer. Number 2, Section 2C, Rule 7 requires that the pleading shall specify the relief sought. If it is settled rule that a court cannot grant a relief not prayed for in the pleadings or in excess of that being sought. However, although the rule mandates that the relief prayed for be specified, the same rule allows a pleader to include a general prayer for such further or other reliefs as may be deemed just or equitable. Because of the rule allowing the inclusion of a general prayer, it was ruled that under Section 2C, Rule 7 of the Rules of Court, a court can grant the relief warranted by the allegations and the proof even if it is not specifically sought by the injured party. The inclusion of a general prayer may justify the grant of a remedy different from or together with the specific remedy sought if the facts alleged in the complaint and the evidence introduced so warrant. Signature and address. Number one, every pleading must be signed by the plaintiff or counsel representing him, stating in either case his address. This address should not be a post office box. This is according to Section 3, Rule 7 of the Rules of Court. In the absence of a proper notice to the court of a change of address, service upon the parties must be made at the last address of their counsel of record. Number two, a signed pleading is one that is signed either by the party himself or his counsel. Section 3, Rule 7 is clear on this matter. It requires that the pleading must be signed by the party or counsel representing him. Therefore, only the signature of either the party himself or his counsel operates to validly convert the pleading from one that is unsigned to one that is signed. Effect of an unsigned pleading. The signature in a pleading is important for it to have a legal effect. Under the Rule of Court, Section 3, Rule 7, an unsigned pleading produces no legal effect. The court, however, is authorized to allow the pleader to correct the deficiency if it shows to the satisfaction of the court that the failure to sign the pleading was due to mere inadvertence and not intended for delay. That is according to Section 3, Rule 7 of the Rules of Court. Significance of the signature of counsel. Number 1. The signature of a counsel in a pleading is significant. The signature constitutes a certificate by him that A. He has read the pleading, B. That to the best of his knowledge, information, and belief, there is a good ground to support it, and C. That it is not interposed for delay. A counsel's signature is such an integral part of a pleading that failure to comply with this requirement reduces the pleading to a mere scrap of paper, totally bereft of legal effect. A counsel's signature on a pleading is neither an empty formality nor even a mere means of identification. Through the counsel's signature, a lawyer asserts his competence, credibility, and ethics. Signing a pleading is such a solemn component of legal practice that the court had on occasions decried the delegation of this task to non-lawyers as a violation of the Code of Professional Responsibility. Number two. It has been held that counsel's authority and duty to sign a pleading are personal to him. The preparation and signing of a pleading constitute legal work involving practice of law, which is reserved exclusively for the members of the legal profession. Accordingly, however, counsel may delegate the signing of a pleading to another lawyer, but cannot do so in favor of one who is not. When counsel is subject to disciplinary action in connection with pleading. A counsel shall be subject to disciplinary action in the following cases. Letter A, when he deliberately files an unsigned pleading. Letter B, when he signs a pleading in violation of the rules. Letter C, when he alleges in the pleading scandalous or indecent matter. Or letter D, when he fails to promptly report to the court a change of his address. Verification in a pleading. Pleadings need not be under oath, verified, or accompanied by affidavit except when so required by law or rule. Example, the statement of claim in small claim cases requires a verification. All pleadings in forcible entry and unlawful detainer actions need to be verified. Bar 2018 petitions for certiorari prohibition and mandamus require a verification. A complaint in an environmental case must also be verified. How a pleading is verified? Number one, a pleading is verified by an affidavit. The affidavit declares that A, the defendant has read the pleading, and B, the allegations therein are true and correct of his personal knowledge or based on authentic records. A verification cannot be based on mere belief. The amendment to Section 4 of Rule 7 removed any reference to belief to ensure that the pleading is based on facts, not on mere imagination. Thus, a verification based on information and belief or upon knowledge, information, and belief shall be treated as an unsigned pleading. Number two, the verification requirement is deemed substantially complied with when one who has an ample knowledge to swear to the truth of the allegations in the complaint or petition signs the verification and when matters alleged in the petition have been made in good faith or are true and correct. Significance of a verification. The verification requirement is significant as it is intended to secure an assurance that the allegations in the pleading are true and correct and not the product of the imagination or a matter of speculation, and that the pleading is filed in good faith. Effect of lack of a verification or of a defective verification. Number one, a pleading required to be verified but lacks the proper verification shall be treated as an unsigned pleading. Hence, it produces no legal effect. Number two, it has however been held that the absence of a verification or the non-compliance with the verification requirement does not necessarily render the pleading defective. It is only a formal and not a jurisdictional requirement. The requirement is a condition affecting only the form of the pleading. The court may order its submission or correction or act on the pleading if the attending circumstances are such that strict compliance with the rule may be dispensed with in order that the ends of justice may be served. The rule is in keeping with the principle that rules of procedure are established to secure substantial justice and that technical requirements may be dispensed with in meritorious cases. The court emphasized that a defective verification amounts to a formal defect which is neither jurisdictional or fatal and for which the court may order a correction. Other requirements. Number one, all pleadings, motions, and papers filed in court by counsel shall bear, in addition to his current professional tax receipt number or PTR, his current IBP official receipt number indicating its date of issue. Pleadings, motions, and papers who do not comply with this requirement may not be acted upon by the court, without prejudice to whatever disciplinary action the court may take against the erring counsel, who shall likewise be required to comply with the requirement within 5 days from notice. Failure to comply with such requirement shall be ground for further disciplinary sanction and contempt of court. Number two, on November 12, 2002, the Supreme Court granted the request of the Board of Governors of the IBP and the Sangguniang Panlalawigan of Ilocos Norte to require all lawyers to indicate their roles of attorney number and all papers and pleadings filed in judicial and quasi-judicial bodies, in addition to the previously required current professional tax receipt or PTR and the IBP official receipt number. The requirement was meant to protect the public by making it easier to detect imposters who represent themselves as members of the bar. Non-compliance with the requirement has the same effect as the failure to indicate counsel's IBP receipt number. This requirement is directed only to lawyers and not to be construed as precluding a party who is not a lawyer from signing a pleading himself. The requirement is intended to protect the integrity of legal practice. Number three, all practicing members of the bar are also required to indicate in all pleadings filed before the court or quasi-judicial bodies the number and date of issue of their mandatory continuing illegal education or MCLE, certificate of compliance, or certificate of exemption. Failure to disclose the required information would cause the dismissal of the case and the expunction of the pleadings from the records. Per en banc resolution of the Supreme Court dated September 2, 2008, the effectivity date of the implementation of this rule was moved from August 25, 2008 to January 1, 2009. The inclusion of information regarding compliance with or exemption from the MCLE seeks to ensure that legal practice is reserved only for those who have complied with the recognized mechanism for keeping abreast with law and jurisprudence, maintaining the ethics of the profession, and enhancing the standards of the practice of law. Certification against forum shopping. Number one, the certification against forum shopping is a sworn statement in which the plaintiff or principal party certifies in a complaint or initiatory pleading to the following matters. Letter A, that he has not commenced any action or filed any claim involving the same issues in any court, tribunal, or quasi-judicial agency, and to the best of his knowledge, no such other actions or claim is pending therein. Letter B, that if there is such other pending action or claim, a complete statement of the present status thereof, and letter C, that if he should thereafter learn that the same or similar action or claim has been filed or is pending, he shall report that fact within 5 days therefrom to the court wherein his aforesaid complaint is initiatory or initiatory pleading has been filed. Number two, the requirements involving the certification against forum shopping apply both to natural and juridical persons, since no distinction is made between natural and juridical persons by the rules of court. Purpose of the certification. Number one, the certification constitutes an assurance given to the court or other tribunal that there are no other pending cases involving basically the same parties, issues, and causes of action. The purpose of prohibiting forum shopping is also to prevent contradictory decisions of two or more courts on the same controversy. Number two, the rationale against forum shopping is that a party should not be allowed to pursue simultaneous remedies in two different fora. Filing multiple petitions or complaints constitutes abuse of court processes, which tends to degrade the administration of justice, wreaks havoc upon orderly judicial procedure, and adds to the congestion of the heavily burdened dockets of the court. Meaning of forum shopping. Number one, forum shopping is the act by a party of repetitively availing of several judicial remedies in different courts simultaneously or successively, all substantially founded on the same transactions and the same essential facts or circumstances, and all raising substantially the same issues either pending or already resolved adversely by some other courts. Number two, specifically, there is forum shopping where there exists a identity of parties, or at least such parties as represent the same interest in both actions, b identity of rights asserted and relief prayed for, the relief being founded on the same facts, and c the identity of the two preceding particulars in such that any judgment rendered in the pending case, regardless of which party is successful, would amount to res judicata in the other case. Number three, the act of splitting a single cause of action is a mode of forum shopping. The certification is not a jurisdictional requirement. The certification is mandatory under Section 5 of Rule 7, but not jurisdictional since jurisdiction over the subject of the action is conferred by law. The absence of the certification would not affect the jurisdiction of the court over the action. Three ways of committing forum shopping. The Supreme Court enumerated the ways by which forum shopping may be committed, thus number one, filing multiple cases based on the same cause of action and with the same prayer, the previous case not having been resolved yet, where the ground for dismissal is litis pendentia. Number two, filing multiple cases based on the same cause of action and the same prayer, the previous case having been finally resolved, where the ground for dismissal is res judicata. And number three, filing multiple cases based on the same cause of action but with different prayers, splitting of causes of action, where the ground for dismissal is also either litis pendentia or res judicata. Determination of the existence of forum shopping. Number one, to determine whether a party violated the rule against forum shopping, the most important question to ask is whether the elements of litis pendentia are present or whether a final judgment in one case will result to res judicata in another. Otherwise stated, to determine the existence of forum shopping, the test is to see whether in the two or more cases pending, there is A, identity of parties, letter B, identity of rights or causes of action, and C, identity of relief sought. Number two, where the relief sought in the two actions are different, there is no forum shopping, even if the parties in the actions are the same. Where one action is for a permanent injunction and the other is a petition for certiorari, there is no identity of reliefs. Number three, where the relief sought in two courts involving the same parties is to restrain a government official from implementing the same order, there is forum shopping because there is identity of reliefs. Number four, the filing of six appeals, complaints, or petition for the same purpose of frustrating the execution of a judgment is a clear case of forum shopping. Number five, to file an ordinary appeal and petition for certiorari with the Court of Appeals is to engage in forum shopping when the petitioner commenced the appeal only 4 months had elapsed prior to filing of the petition for certiorari under Rule 65 with the Court of Appeals. The elements of litis pendentia are present between the two suits. Both suits are founded in exactly the same facts and refer to the same subject matter. The RTC orders which dismiss the civil case for failure to prosecute. In both cases, the petitioner is seeking the reversal of the RTC orders. The parties, the rights asserted, the issues professed, and the reliefs prayed for are all the same. It is evident that the judgment of one forum may amount to res judicata in the other. Where a party's petition for certiorari and subsequent appeals seek to achieve one and the same purpose, there is forum shopping, which is a sufficient ground for the dismissal of the certiorari petition. Number six, in a case the plaintiff filed an unlawful detainer case against a defendant based on violations of the terms of the lease contract, which at that time has not yet expired, during the pendency of the case and after the lease contract had expired, a second case for unlawful detainer was filed by the same plaintiff against the same defendant. The second complaint disclosed the existence of the first case. The second suit was based on the expiration of the lease contract. The court found no forum shopping under the facts since the suits were based on different grounds. At the time the first complaint was filed, the ground of expiration of the lease was not yet available. Number seven, there is no forum shopping in a case where the subsequent purchaser of foreclosed property filed a petition for issuance of a writ of possession after previously filing an action for ejectment against the same defendant, where the latter action was dismissed for being the wrong remedy and appeal from its dismissal having been withdrawn. There is no identity or similarity of actions between the two proceedings, the petition being just an incident to the transfer of title. The court also explained that having realized the erroneous resort to the wrong remedy, an error having been committed in good faith, the raising of a matter to the correct forum by the petitioner does not constitute forum shopping. Quoting the Court of Appeals with approval, the court reiterated, raising matter to the correct forum, employing the wrong mode or remedy, and then later resorting to the correct one does not make an instance of forum shopping. This is the case of Spouses Reyes versus Spouses Chung. Number 8, there may be situations where a landowner whose land is subject to land reform has a pending case before the Department of Agrarian Reform or DAR. For determination of just compensation, still he files a petition before the RTC designated as a Special Agrarian Court or SAC. For the same purpose, such recourse is not strictly a case of forum shopping since the administrative determination is not binding on the Special Agrarian Court. There is no forum shopping in simultaneously filing a co-warranto petition and a complaint for impeachment. Co-warranto and impeachment may proceed independently of each other as these remedies are distinct as to number one, jurisdiction, number two, grounds, number three, applicable rules pertaining to initiation, filing and dismissal, and number four, limitations. The crux of the controversy, a co-warranto petition, is the determination of whether or not the respondent legally holds the position. On the other hand, impeachment is for respondent's prosecution for certain impeachable offenses. Simply put, while the respondent's title to hold a public office is the issue in co-warranto petition, impeachment necessarily presupposes that the respondent legally holds the public office. The only issue in impeachment is whether or not the respondent committed impeachable offenses to warrant removal from office. The relief sought are different. The respondent in a co-warranto proceeding shall be adjudged to cease from holding a public office, which he or she is ineligible to hold. A conviction for the charges of impeachable offenses shall result to the removal of the respondent from the public office that he or she is legally holding. It is not legally possible to impeach or remove a person from an office that he or she, in the first place, does not and cannot legally hold or occupy. Also, there can be no forum shopping because the impeachment proceedings before the House is not the impeachment case proper, since it is only a determination of probable cause. The process before the House is merely inquisitorial and is merely a means of discovering if a person may be reasonably charged with a crime. Who executes the certification against forum shopping? Exception number one, it is the plaintiff or principal party who executes the certification again under oath. It must be executed by the party pleader, not by his counsel. If, however, for justifiable reasons, the party pleader is unable to sign, he must execute a special power of attorney, designating his counsel of record to sign in his behalf. Reason, it is the petitioner and not the counsel who is in the best position to know whether he or it actually filed or caused the filing of a petition. A certification signed by counsel is a defective certification and a valid cause for dismissal. This is the general rule and the prevailing rule. Number two, in one case, Go versus Rico, petitioners admitted that neither of them signed the certification against forum shopping. Only their counsel did. The court in this case emphatically stressed that the certification by counsel and not by the principal party himself is no certification at all. The reason for requiring that it must be signed by the principal party himself is that he has actual knowledge whether he has initiated similar actions in other courts, agencies, or tribunals. Their lawyer's explanation that they were out of town at the time their petition was filed with the Court of Appeals was considered bereft of basis. That explanation was an afterthought as it was not alleged by counsel in her certification against forum shopping. Signing the certification when the plaintiff is a juridical entity. Number one, a juridical entity, unlike a natural person, can only perform physical acts through properly delegated individuals. A corporation can exercise its power to sue only upon authority of its board of directors or trustees, the latter being the body which exercises corporate powers. The corporate officers and agents, therefore, cannot exercise any corporate power pertaining to the corporation without any authority from the board of directors. Corollarily, in order for a person to represent a corporation in a suit, a board resolution authorizing the former to represent the latter is necessary. Therefore, a board resolution authorizing a corporate officer to execute the certification against forum shopping is a necessary requirement under the rules. Otherwise, the complaint will have to be dismissed. A certification signed by a person who was not authorized by the board of directors renders a petition subject to dismissal. The exercise of corporate powers, including the power to sue, is lodged with the board of directors, which acts as a body representing the stockholders. For corporations to authorize a representative to sign a certification against forum shopping, must be selected or authorized collectively by the board of directors. Number two, the above rule is perfectly consistent with the fundamental tenets of corporation law. However, the rule has been liberally interpreted by the court in several cases. The court itself declared that in several instances, the court has considered a secretary's certificate sufficient proof of authority for a person named to represent a corporation in a suit. In a more liberal interpretation of the rule, the court in the earlier case of Cagayan Valley Drug Corporation versus Commissioner of Internal Revenue ruled that the following officials or employees of a company can sign the verification and certification against forum shopping without need of a board resolution. A. Chairperson of the Board of Directors. B. President of the Corporation. C. General Manager or Acting General Manager. D. Personal Officer. And E. Employment Specialist in a labor case. Accordingly, the rationale behind this rule is that the officers mentioned are in a position to verify the truthfulness and correctness of the allegations in the petition. The same case, however, clarified that appending the board resolution to the complaint or petition is the better procedure to obviate any question on the authority of the signatory to the verification and the certification. The required submission of the board resolution is grounded on the basic precept that corporation powers are exercised by the board of directors and not solely by an officer of the corporation. Hence, the power to sue and be sued in any court or quasi-judicial tribunal is necessarily lodged with the said board. Number three, a more recent pronouncement of the Supreme Court conceded that the corporation exercises its powers and transacts its business through its board of directors or trustees. Accordingly, unless authorized by the board of directors or trustees, corporate officers and agents cannot exercise any corporate power pertaining to the corporation. A board resolution authorizing the corporate officers and agents is therefore required. The court, in the same case, using a more liberal approach, declared that jurisprudence has allowed the corporate president to sign the verification certification of non-forum shopping even without a board resolution because the said officer is presumed to have sufficient knowledge to swear to the truth of the allegation stated in the complaint or petition. Number four, a liberal interpretation of the rule was made in another case where the court allowed the signature of an academic dean in a case involving a faculty member in his college. While the court recognized that as a general rule, the board of directors or board of trustees of a corporation must authorize the person who signs the verification and certification against forum shopping, such authorization, ruled the court, is not necessarily what it is self-evident that the signatory is in a position to verify the truthfulness and correctness of the allegation in the petition. This is in the case of University of the East versus Bepanyo. Number five, also, even a belated submission of the written authority of the board was found to be a substantial compliance with Section 5 of Rule 7 of the Rules of Court, especially when the acts of the officers in filing the petition were also ratified by the board. Procedural lapses in relation to the certification against forum shopping have in some cases been disregarded by the court for compelling reasons, such as the prima facie merits of the petition. Accordingly, the rules on forum shopping are not to be interpreted with absolute literalness as to subvert the ultimate purpose of achieving substantial justice as expeditiously as possible. Number six, despite the liberal interpretation of the rule in some cases, one must not lose sight of the general rule consistent with the general principles of corporate law. In case the petitioner is a private corporation, the verification and certification may be signed for and in behalf of this corporation by a specifically authorized person, including its retained counsel, who has personal knowledge of the facts required to be established by the documents. The reason is that a corporation has no power except those expressly conferred on it by the corporation code and those that are implied by or are incidental to its existence. In turn, a corporation exercises corporate powers through its board of directors and or its duly authorized officers and agents. Physical acts like the signing of documents can be performed only by natural persons, duly authorized for the purpose by corporate, by laws, or by a specific act of the board of directors. Rule, if there are several plaintiffs or petitioners, exceptions. Number one, The certification against forum shopping must be signed by all the plaintiffs or petitioners in a case. Otherwise, those who did not sign will be dropped as parties to the case. Under reasonable or justifiable circumstances, however, as when the plaintiffs or petitioners share a common interest and invoke a common cause of action or defense, the signature of only one of them substantially complies with the rule. In a case involving co-owners of property, where the said property is the subject matter of the suit, the failure of the other co-owners to sign the verification and certificate of forum shopping is not fatal, as the signing by only one or some of them constitutes substantial compliance of the rule. Number two, the above rule will not be applied if dishonesty attended the signing of the certification, as when it was made to appear that one of the petitioners has signed the certification against forum shopping, despite his having passed away 7 years before. Pleadings requiring a certification against forum shopping. Number one, the certification against forum shopping applies to the complaint and other initiatory pleadings asserting as a claim for relief. That's Section 5, Rule 7, Rules of Court. These initiatory pleadings include not only the original complaint, but also a permissive counterclaim, cross-claim, third, fourth, etc. party complaint, complaint in intervention, petition, or any application in which a party asserts his claim for relief. It bears stressing that the rule distinctly provides that the required certification against forum shopping is intended to cover an initiatory pleading, meaning an incipient application of a party, asserting a claim for relief. If the answer with a counterclaim is filed merely to counter petitioner's complaint and is a claim for relief that is derived only from or is necessarily connected with the main action or complaint, it is not an initiatory pleading. Number two, a comment is not an initiatory pleading. A comment required by an appellate tribunal is merely an expression of the views and observations of a respondent for the purpose of giving the court sufficient information as to whether the petition is legally proper as a remedy to the acts complained of. It does not require a certification against forum shopping. The rule does not require a certification against forum shopping for a compulsory counterclaim because it cannot be the subject of a separate and independent adjudication, as when the counterclaim is for damages, moral, exemplary, or attorney's fees by reason of the alleged malicious and unfounded suit filed against the defendant. It is therefore not an initiatory pleading. An ex parte petition for the issuance of a writ of possession is not an initiatory pleading, although denominated as a petition. It does not aim to initiate a litigation but is an incident to or a consequence of certain proceedings like foreclosure cases, applicability to special civil actions. The court held that the rule requiring a certification against forum shopping applies as well to special civil actions, since special civil actions is governed by the rules for ordinary civil actions subject to the specific rules prescribed for special civil action. Such specific rule, for example, appears under Rule 46, Section 3, which requires that every petition for certiorari be accompanied by a sworn certification of non-forum shopping. Effects of non-compliance with the rule on certification against forum shopping. Number one, a violation of the rule requiring the certification against forum shopping does not authorize the court to dismiss a case on its own motion or initiative. The rule requires that the dismissal be upon motion and after hearing. Number two, if the case is dismissed for failure to comply with the certification requirement, the dismissal is as a rule without prejudice unless the order of dismissal otherwise provides. Hence, where the dismissal is silent as to the character of the dismissal is presumed to be without prejudice to the refiling of the complaint. If a complaint is dismissed for failure to comply with the required certification of its forum shopping, it can appeal from the order of dismissal where such dismissal is one without prejudice. Answer, he cannot appeal. Is as a rule not appealable. The remedy provided for under Section 1 of Rule 41 is to avail the proper special civil action under Rule 65. Number 3, the failure to submit a certification against forum shopping is a ground for dismissal, separate and distinct from forum shopping. As a ground for dismissal, a complaint may be dismissed for forum shopping even if there is a certification attached, and conversely, a complaint may be dismissed for lack of the required certification even if the party has not committed forum shopping. Compliance with the certification against forum shopping is separate from and independent of the avoidance of forum shopping itself. The general rule is that non-compliance or a defect in the certification is not curable by its subsequent submission or correction. However, there are cases when the court exercises leniency and relaxes the rule on the ground of substantial compliance. The presence of special circumstances or compelling reasons. If there are objections relating to non-compliance with the verification and certification of non-forum shopping, the same should be raised in the proceedings below and not for the first time on appeal. That is in the case of GSI's Family Bank Thrift Bank Incorporated versus BPI Family Bank. Effect of willful and deliberate forum shopping, dismissal of all pending claims. Number one, if the act of the party on or his counsel clearly constitute willful and deliberate forum shopping, the same shall be a ground for summary dismissal. Here no petition, here no motion to dismiss and hearing are required. The dismissal in the case with prejudice is upon direct contempt as well as cause for administrative sanctions. Number two, jurisprudence holds that if the forum shopping is not considered willful and deliberate, the subsequent case shall be dismissed without prejudice on the ground of either litis pendentia or res judicata. However, if the forum shopping is willful and deliberate, both or all, if there are more than two actions, shall be dismissed with prejudice. For instance, if one petition is pending before the Supreme Court and the other case is pending in a lower court, both cases will be summarily dismissed once there is a finding of forum shopping. This is so because the twin dismissal is the punitive measure to those who trifle with the orderly administration of justice. Effect of submission of a false certification. It may happen that the pleading has been filed with the required certification against forum shopping, but the allegations therein or the matter certified to therein are false. Under the rules of submission of a false certification, which shall constitute indirect contempt of court without prejudice to the corresponding administrative and criminal sanctions. Effect of non-compliance with the undertaking. Failure to comply with the undertakings in the certification against forum shopping has the same effect as the submission of a false certification. Hence, such failure shall constitute indirect contempt of court without prejudice to the corresponding sanctions. The criminal sanction will apply to the submission of a false certification. Summary of guidance respecting non-compliance with the requirements of or submission of defective verification and certification against forum shopping. For the guidance of the bench and bar, the court restates in capsule from the jurisprudential pronouncements already reflected above respecting non-compliance with the requirements on or submission of defective verification certification against forum shopping. Number one, a distinction must be made between non-compliance with the requirements on or submission of a defective verification and non-compliance with the requirement on or submission of defective certification against forum shopping. Number two, as to verification, non-compliance therewith or a defect therein does not necessarily render the pleading fatally defective. The court may order its submission or correction or act on the pleading if the attending circumstances are such that strict compliance with the rule may be dispensed with in order that the ends of justice may be served thereby. Number three, verification is deemed substantially complied with when one who has ample knowledge to swear to the truth of the allegations in the complaint or petition signs the verification and when matters alleged in the petition have been made in good faith or are true and correct. Number four, as to the certification against forum shopping, non-compliance therewith or a defect therein, unlike in verification, is generally not curable by its subsequent submission or correction thereof, unless there is a need to relax the rule on the ground of substantial compliance or presence of special circumstances or compelling reasons. Number five, the certification against forum shopping must be signed by all the plaintiffs or petitioners in a case. Otherwise, those who did not sign will be dropped as a parties to the case. Under reasonable or justifiable circumstances, however, as when all the plaintiffs or petitioners share a common interest and invoke a common cause of action or defense, the signature of only one of them in the certification against forum shopping substantially complies with the rule. Number six, finally, the certification against forum shopping must be executed by the party pleader, not by his counsel. If, however, for reasonable or justifiable reasons, the party pleader is able to sign and execute a special power of attorney designating his counsel of record to sign on his behalf.